Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. What I love about Shopify is basically how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. I know we use Shopify here at Betches, and honestly, anyone with any kind of business could really benefit from Shopify. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/betches, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/betches now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/betches.
Welcome back to another episode of Ask Men Anything. It's me, Emma Willman. Thank you so much for being here. Today, my guest is actor Chike Okonkwo. You can see him on NBC's La Brea, and the series finale is actually airing February 13th, which is the day this episode comes out. I was very excited to interview him to the point where, okay, I'm going to tell you this. So I was listening to like every interview of him I could find, and I almost felt like I over-researched him going into it. You know when you're excited to meet someone or maybe do a date and you look at all of their social media stuff and then you're with them and they're like, oh yeah, my morning was, and you're like, oh wait, I know your morning. You ate a bagel with a little bit of cream cheese. And they're like, how'd you know that? And you're like, so I was trying not to do that because I had researched him a whole bunch. What a calming presence this man has. We have a great conversation talking about his father, the power of presence, what it's like discovering gender in the theater community, also how to use your privilege for good, how to help others and the best way that you can, and to inform yourself with the different dynamics of world politics. We also talk about going on a first date on Valentine's Day, yay or nay. And at one point, I get a little flustered and I end up oversharing about a sexual routine with my girlfriend now that I've sold the episode. Here it is. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's been great to be here.
I was listening to an interview with you and I listened to a few of them. As many as I could find, actually, because once I started listening, your voice is very soothing, which is well documented as.
Yeah, it is. People say that a lot now.
Very soothing, and also to the point where it is part of the calm app, so you are reading stories for people to get them to go to sleep.
That's right. So if you nod off during the interview, I won't blame you too hard.
What was the audition process for the calm app like?
There actually wasn't one. I guess I must just latently have a very soporific voice. I don't know why. But no, they just approached me. Funny enough, I did my first story for them February 2020. And then the world shut down and everyone was using the app. So
great timing.
It was very good timing for me, yeah.
That's great because everyone needed to calm the fuck down.
They definitely did.
And then you're in their ears.
Yeah.
What about when you get mad? Does it like... Do you think
during the reading of the story?
Well, that would probably really fuck someone up. They're falling asleep and then you like throw a curveball in there. What happens? Because like I would imagine when you do get mad and change your voice, it has even more gravitas because people are used to it sounding calm.
That's a good question. I tend not to get too mad these days.
How? Just inner peace?
Just inner peace, maybe.
That's beautiful.
I think I tend to stay pretty calm.
There was a real thread in your like... It was such an like authentic commitment to telling stories and being attracted to storytelling that it inspired me where I was like, oh, it made me see presenting stories in a different, as like almost like sometimes I think doing comedy and just being around New York, I forget how powerful storytelling can be. Like I'll think of little chunks of stories, not the whole story, but you talking about like your attraction to storytelling made me be like, I want to start telling more stories about little slices of life. Like I grew up in Bumfuck, Maine, and there's this whole lobstering community. Uh-huh. And while I was listening to you, it inspired me to want to start putting stories out there about the lobstering community.
That's already fascinating. Right? Like, I want to know everything about that story.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
I really do.
There was this lobstering community where they had this, it was called the Head Harbor Mafia. Uh-huh. And it was like a little lobsterman mafia. Mm-hmm. And listening to you talk about your love of stories like inspired that in me.
Oh, that's so amazing. I honestly, it's been my whole life since I was a kid. Mm. I think there are some kids who, you know, go along and do, you know, good kids do what they're told, and other kids who are a bit more energetic and frenetic. I think I was probably in the latter. But the stories were always things that I just, that caught me from a really early age. I was 6 years old when my mum took me and my older sister to the theatre for the first time. And then from that moment on, it's really just, it's captivated me. And I think being able to hold on to whatever it was that got me as a kid has really helped me in my career and helped me as an adult as well. I feel like I'm still that kid who's mesmerized by stories. So I genuinely, in any format, would love to hear about the lobster community in Maine.
It's rugged. I feel like with being able to hold on to like your like attraction to stories or any kind of wanderlust you have as a kid, because life gets in the way.
It does.
And so that's such a, being able to be like, I'm going to have that the purity of something, because six is like your little baby.
Yeah.
Do you remember what the play was?
I do. So it was there was a famous cartoon in the UK at the time called Super Ted, about a teddy bear who was a superhero.
Yes.
And they made like a Christmas show about Super Ted. And I think, I don't remember, I should probably look back on this now actually, but he had a friend, or maybe it was the antagonist, the bad guy, was a skeleton. Anyway, at the end of the play, they came down into the audience and picked like four or five kids to go up on stage.
Shit.
And I think about this often. I was one of the four or five kids.
My Were you raising your hand?
I wasn't.
They just came to you?
They just came and grabbed me. And my
older sister,
my older sister didn't get pulled up on the stage, but that my mom said she saw in my eyes that I was like, what is this magical world? And it sort of stuck with me.
And then do you remember being up on the stage?
I do. I really do. Maybe that story's been told quite a lot, but I do remember six pretty clearly. I remember that experience very clearly. And I do remember just, you know, that thing of, and I've been on stages a lot now, but that thing of it being a whole world on the stage.
Yes.
And you sort of can't really, you know this obviously, you stand up and you can't really engage faces too much, so there's so many lights. But I do remember very, very vividly the feeling of the room, that energy in the room. I actually, you know, for years, my whole life, I've always appreciated big spaces like football stadiums or big theaters or concerts or whatever. I just love the energy of a group. And I think going back to the storytelling thing, you know, you can really, I wish, if there was one special skill I could have, it would be to be a stand-up. I think it's the hardest thing in the world. But you know, in the way that you've crafted these stories, that one room will really react to that entirely differently to another room. And there's a sort of sixth sense that you've picked up over the years of what that means and what works and what doesn't quite work. That is really fascinating to me, like group dynamics in that sense.
Totally regroup dynamics. And it's extremely bizarre because it also makes you be like, with so many things, it's like you have to have a real sense of self, because sometimes when people love you, it's not the truth. And when people hate you, it's not the truth.
100%.
You have to go, where am I in this equation? Because I can't believe the hype and I can't believe the worst critic there either.
And then for your work, where am I being effective or ineffectual? Right. Like, where can I be more effective? What can I hone? And it, honestly, it'd be like 1% of a hone sometimes.
Yes.
And it can make the world of difference.
1% of a hone is huge.
Yeah.
Even just like that 1% difference, like recently I've been trying to not be on my phone first thing in the morning. Mm. So hard.
It's so hard.
Oh, all I want to do is just reach for that little, it's like, I want to just check it so bad.
Yeah.
But I've been trying to make my 1% difference is just don't go on the phone first thing and try to do anything,
yeah.
Like whatever I have to do to
now,
not get on that damn phone.
Now you've inspired me, because I've tried that as well.
It is
I tried
brutal.
To charge my phone in the other room. Can't do it.
I locked mine up in a little container once, and then I couldn't remember the code. And then I had,
and then you had
a breakdown.
Attack.
I was like, oh no, I need to get that. I have to get that phone. When you were in the National Youth Music Theater.
Yeah.
So this is, so you mentioned that, or I had read that Idris Elba and Daniel Craig were also in it. Were they in at the same time?
No, they're both a bit older than me.
Okay, got it. Okay, that makes sense. And then so it was, were you singing in that as well?
I was. I loved musicals as a kid.
Huh.
And I'm honestly, weirdly, have never done one as an adult. But it was my whole world. There were two theatre companies in the UK, the National Youth Theatre, which was honestly like, you know, straight plays and very serious acting, and then like really promiscuous kids. And then the National Youth Music Theatre, where everyone was sort of, even though we were sort of 17, 18, late teenage years, everyone was just a bit more sort of wonder, awestruck, and it was a different vibe. But I really wanted to be a classical actor, and so the National Youth Theatre was a path I really wanted to take, but I just really enjoyed doing the musicals and was in that company for several years, and it changed my life. I'm really glad you asked about it, because it's still one of those things that I look back on, and I've got very dear friends who I made at that time, two of the people who have been my closest friends my whole life. Ben Barnes, wonderful actor, done
great
lots
name.
Of movies.
That's great a great name.
And is a wonderful musician now as well. And Gugu and Bart Arora, another great name.
Great name, yeah.
Very dear friends of mine. We met when we were 16, 17, and have been on this whole journey together, all moved to the States around the same time as well. And then, you know, I mentioned older people who are in the company. You're sort of, in that company, you were very aware of actors who had then gone on to become.
Of course, it's like a guiding light.
Exactly, and so Jude Law was oh one of those guiding lights, and he is just such an incredible actor. And David Oyelowo, who is a very dear friend of mine and now my business partner, David has been entirely a guiding light, in as much as seeing what he's been able to achieve and him and his wife been able to achieve in their careers has been just amazing. But to know that we all came from the same place and all learned the same thing the same way was wonderful.
Was it hard to connect with people that like weren't in the arts?
Oh, I tell you, it's so funny. I grew up in South London. It's like probably what's equivalent. It's like, I don't know, the Bronx of London. And everyone I was around from, you know, from birth till 16, 17, it was like people loved sport. They liked soccer and what have you, and very sort of prototypical masculine things. Sure. That was kind of the world I grew up in. I went to a boys' school. It was very rough.
Oh, damn.
Very violent.
My dad went to a boys' school too. It sounded brutal.
Yeah, yeah. It was like Harry Potter with none of the charm and no girls.
Yeah.
But when I found theatre in my teenage years in that company, then, because they would audition kids from all over the country, and very few would get in, but it was all of the most talented people I'd ever known. And everyone was there for the same reason.
Right.
And so I feel like I found my people when I was sort of 16, 17. And not to say that the other people weren't my people, but this was definitely more of the things that I was just interested in.
Was it hard to date outside? Like, because sometimes I feel like when you have like a big dream, trying to articulate that dream can be kind of, when you articulate it, you know, then you're at risk of someone being like, I can't, how are you going to do that?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Which especially in dating when people, well, not so much when you're younger. When you're younger and you present a dream, people are more like, oh, you can do anything. When you're in your 20s, then start people going, why are you still living with your mom? What do you mean? You're going to start a food truck or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But when you were dating, when you were that age, if you were, was it hard to like share your dream with people?
So growing up, going to a boys' school at this age.
Right. How'd you even meet girls?
Well, I had the magic power because I was the only boy doing all of the plays and all of the dance and all with all the girls. And so the magic power being, when I'm between two sisters. I have a younger brother as well, but I grew up between these two sisters who were, and my, and, you know, very feminine energy in my home.
Sure.
And then went into dance and musical theater and was just always around the girls. And I would always be the one having to do all the, you know, the dances with all the girls because there was only me, or very few boys, I should say. But then
people need to join musical theater to get, like, you know, they might think maybe there are some gay guys in it, but I'm sure, yes, there are. But if you are a straight guy in it, bing.
For sure. And then I'm 15, 16, and my special power is I can speak to women or to girls very, very easily.
Right.
And most of my friends who are guys just absolutely couldn't.
I always wonder why that is so hard.
Yeah.
It's nerves. You get nervous.
You do. And when you're in the theater a lot, you sort of, I think you just lose all of that. And people and women are much more comfortable around you as well, which is a big deal at that age. So it was definitely helpful for many things. Then to answer your question more directly, you know, when you get into your 20s, and you're right, like this is a difficult thing to pursue. And there isn't much of a reference for success, actually, especially where I grew up. So, you know, people see you on TV a couple of times here or there, and it's like, oh, that was cool for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what I realized back in England was you could be on a big, big TV show. And when it was on, it was kind of cool. But the moment it finished, no one gave a shit. So
that's harsh. I feel like I think in America, you get a little more mileage out of
it's
that.
So people talk to me about work I did 10 years ago here.
Yeah.
So
I think in the States, like even if you do something once, then, you know, people will be like it gets somewhere. I wonder why in London they're so harsh about it.
They just don't give a shit. I don't
care.
Yeah.
Maybe London and New York, that's the case.
Yeah,
they're,
I think,
like,
you're right.
You know, all right, over it. What are you doing now? And you're like, Jesus Christ. Like,
give me a break.
Give
I just
me a
did
minute.
Something.
I'm trying. I'm busy on the go and don't always have time to go to the grocery store and pick out what I'm going to eat for the week. Thankfully, I found ButcherBox. They take the guesswork out of shopping and cooking with a great selection of fish, chicken, beef, and more. And their cuts of meat are always way better than anything I would find in the grocery store. I love their chicken thighs. Best chicken thighs I've ever had. I swear on my mom. With ButcherBox, you can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. I can get 100% grass-fed, beef, free-range, organic chicken, and wild-caught seafood delivered straight to my doorstep. I don't even have to mess with going to the store. Plus, they have free shipping always. And because this is really important to me, with ButcherBox, all the meat is humanely raised. That means no antibiotics or added hormones. You can curate and customize what you want in each box, and if you're feeling uninspired in the kitchen, they have an entire catalog of delicious recipes to get you started. All I have to think about is what I'm going to binge watch on TV while I enjoy ButcherBox's high quality cuts. Sign up at ButcherBox.com/AMA and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. Choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at ButcherBox.com/AMA and use code AMA to choose your free for a year offer. Plus, get $20 off your first order.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
There was a quote where you said, if you grow up Nigerian outside of Nigeria, you still grow up Nigerian in some form, was something you realized.
Yeah.
So your parents kept that really intact.
They did. They did. And it's funny, I have, my dad moved to the UK, my parents, both my parents, obviously, but his brothers moved to the US. And so I've got cousins here in America, but we had a very, very similar life growing up, even though we were on different continents.
What's like a traditional Nigerian dish?
Oh, good question. I love this thing. So actually, during the pandemic, right? There was this TikTok craze about egusi soup. It's a particular kind of soup. And loads of white people found it in 2020.
Uh-oh, that's sometimes not good.
It's sometimes not good. In this case, it was excellent.
Oh, did they... What did they do to it?
Well, first of all, they just... So there's one restaurant in LA. I was living in LA at the time, at the beginning of the pandemic.
Did they take away the flavor?
They didn't. Because they went to the one Nigerian restaurant in LA. And I would go there, you know, once a month or something, right, to get, because just a feeling of home.
Sure.
I turned up once and there were maybe 200 people lining up around the block. And I know the lady who runs a place called Veronica's Kitchen, best Nigerian food in LA.
Oh, I'll check it out for
please.
Sure.
And I asked her what's going on. And she said, there's something with this TikTok. And but she was worked off of her feet. And
right.
But it meant that the world suddenly began to understand Nigerian food. And I was very proud of it at the time.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, I'll absolutely check. I don't think I've ever gone to a Nigerian. I used to go to Ethiopian restaurants all the time. Because I had my good friend in college was Ethiopian. So we would go in Boston so she could get like just a sense of the familiarity. And I love eating it with Ethiopian food. You eat it with your hands.
Absolutely. Same as Nigerian. Yeah.
Oh, so I love that because I kind of do that anyway. And that was a place where it was like acceptable to do it. And
sure.
I love doing that.
For sure.
Okay. Here's our segment, Modern Masculinity.
Okay.
How has the concept of masculinity changed from when you were a kid to now?
I would say massively and much for the better. You know, it's funny, 2016 in the world, but also in the film industry in particular, was a real reckoning. Me Too happening. And, you know, that upbringing I told you about,
yes,
you know, growing up in the theater, there was a sense of equality, I think, in the theater that's sort of unmatched in other parts of society. And the way I grew up and sort of learned, I want to say feminism in a way, but the way I learned just basically to be a good human being, was very much informed by my environment. And that was a lot to do with theatre. But the film industry is very, very different. And
yes,
there are lots of things that were permissive, that were acceptable, that, you know, it's an environment that's really hard for everyone to exist in, because if you're inclined like I am, it's uncomfortable, but, you know, it's sort of incentivized to not be spoken about. The fact that that's not the case now is infinitely for the better, in my opinion. And especially on TV and film sets, because it's a very tricky environment sometimes.
It is a tricky environment too, because things are moving so quickly. There's a lot of pressure and there's a lot of fear, which really breeds for people to take advantage.
I agree.
And that is, could be mirrored in like office settings and so many other, it's any settings where it's like, oh my God, if I shake the boat, the consequences are huge and I'm scared. Mm-hmm. And then that's right where, you know, the freaking devil pops up. It's so scary.
Yeah.
I can't believe that was 2016.
I know. And it is a different world from that time. And of course, there is still so much work to be done, but I do feel as though there's been movement forward. I'll tell you, this is a weird sort of story to tell because it's not quite connected.
Yeah, but
Thanksgiving 2016, there was this sort of burgeoning movement in Native American circles around protecting the land. And there was this oil pipeline being built. It feels like a million years ago now.
Yes.
The oil pipeline was being built through the Dakotas, the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Yeah, that was huge.
And I was working in Atlanta, Georgia, watching on my phone as like old Native women were being hosed down by police. And I felt to myself, if there's a way for me to get there and to be there, I need to go. I need to just lend my support, be there. I've since moving to the US 15 years ago, I've constantly been aware of and in circles with and wanting to learn more about Native American culture and the history. Because I feel as though if we're going to work through certain social things and social ills, we need to look at the original one here
Absolutely.
In the US.
Absolutely. And that also makes sense from a storytelling standpoint too, like the incredible stories that are, so underrepresented.
So true. So true. And so I went to North Dakota. I spent some time at the camp there. And when you get to the reservation, you have to do an orientation. If it's your first time there, you have to do an orientation.
And was that just because so many people were coming to help?
So many people.
So they're like, we just want to let you guys know what's going on.
100%.
Okay.
And
that's nice.
It's great. It's
love really, an orientation.
And it's sort of very indicative in my experience of Native American culture of everyone's welcome, but there are certain things here that you need to know.
Yes.
And there were a few things said, a couple of things that were very poignant. First one was, look, we don't need your solutions. This is Native elder leadership. Mm. Maybe your solutions were the things that got us here in the first place. So lend your hands, but we don't need your ideas.
That's so freaking. That's so refreshing. You're like, thank you for letting me know me know where you stand.
Exactly. And the thing that was said that really stuck with me forever in relation to your question was, we appreciate you being here, and the fact that you're here means you're privileged enough to take time out to travel from around the world in some cases. But the fact is, if you're not going to use your privilege to benefit other people, then why do you have it in the first place? And, you know, I've just mulled on that a lot. You know, I walk through the world in a certain way. I'm privileged in that I'm an actor and I get to do the work I love to do in being a man.
Good looking.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it.
Good looking privilege. That's definitely a thing.
But the fact is, I think you can spend a lot of time thinking about the ways in which the world doesn't see you or accept you.
Yes.
And, you know, I live in America, I'm a black man, that comes with its, you know, certain baggage and things. But I had to be really focused on what my privileges are and be able to use those to benefit others. So all of that's to say, because I had that awareness around the same sort of time and was beginning to sort of wanting to practice what I preach, it meant that I've been more able since then to think about the ways in which my privilege as a man can benefit the scope of masculinity in general.
Yes.
I think.
It's so amazing too, to think about one orientation can plant those seeds to have such lasting change and such like a foundation for being helpful. And it's like, how hard would it be for us to do a few, like for just there to be more orientations, you know? And what's so key too is like they're leading it. You need the people leading it that are the ones that are the most affected
it
too.
For sure.
But it's like, I mean, I'd love an orientation before I go in anywhere.
Yeah.
Just give me the 411,
exactly.
You know? And if it's like with an individual person, maybe I wouldn't agree with it, but at least I'd be like, yeah, good to know.
Yeah.
Get it out there.
Like dating orientation.
Yes, absolutely. I also can't believe that was 2016 when that was happening because it feels like I forgot about it. And I remember I remember like following it and being invested. I didn't do anything. I'm going to hold myself accountable there. But I remember being invested. And then that's so scary to think just so much info that we're always getting to then be like, how could I forget about that traumatic thing? When did you become aware of gender as a concept? When did kids start acting differently towards one another based on gender?
I think that the answer to that must be very, very young.
You'd be surprised. Sometimes people are like, I don't know if I ever got it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I've got to give the theater credit in my life, at least.
Sure.
Again, because like I said before, like being in a rehearsal room, being in that space, it is quite, and look, there's bad behavior everywhere, of course there is, but it is quite democratic.
Right.
Just the thought that everyone's ideas are equally valuable in that space. You know, you grow up,
that's huge.
It's a massive thing. You grow up and you become an actor and you move to America and you're working in Hollywood or whatever.
Right.
And, suddenly it's more about being a star, and the weight of that on a set is very, very outweighed, in my opinion. You get treated ridiculously differently.
Absolutely.
Being in the positions that, you know, some of us get to hold, but it's not based on anything real.
Right.
And so for me, being in that more democratic space, that space of all ideas are good ideas, the best idea wins kind of vibe, means that you just comport yourself differently. You're just different.
Also, you see what it's like playing around with expression too. So you're right. Like, wait a minute, that guy's playing a quote unquote girl, and that girl's playing a 100%. What is going on?
And you're doing, that was my life from the age of sort of eight, nine, ten right. years old, and it was never that's wrong or that's bad. It was just this is us expressing ourselves, and you know, the sort of the chips land where they will as far as your life is concerned. Now, I think for me, that means that I was always aware of, I'm going to put it this way, like justice. Like when things were unjust, I just didn't like them.
Not to be an asshat, but what's your zodiac sign?
I'm a Pisces.
Oh, my mom's a Pisces. I'm a Sagittarius, but we're supposed to be really into justice too. I don't know if that's true for, that's like one of the things where they're like,
oh, I see.
Where they're like, you know, you're like, I get obsessed with fairness.
My older sister is a Sagittarius and she's exactly the same.
I'll be like,
maybe
hey,
I just learned it from her actually.
I'll be like, that's not fair. Yeah. And things aren't fair. And but also I know sometimes I get more upset if something's not fair for like me or one of my friends. And then if it slants in my favor when it's not fair, I'm like, it's not that, you know, we're all just people. Right. But so you're obsessed with justice.
And that means that I think I've been less tolerant, I guess, of bad behavior when it comes across, you know, to gender lines. If I see certain things, it's just, it just comes up in me. I just can't sort of help it. But as far as gender itself, I think I've been very, very fortunate to grow up in the world that I've grown up in the way that I've grown up. And those things mean that I can use my voice and use my privilege to sort of support others, I guess.
That's huge. Mm. Sounds like everybody needs to take a theater class.
I would recommend it. I really would.
Did it kill you when you had to take computer science for 3 years? Because he actually got a degree in computer business science, business computer science. I don't know which one of them comes first.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter.
Computer science of business.
That's right.
You can obviously tell I don't know much about business. Computer business.
And by the way, that was par for the course of being a Nigerian kid.
You had to go to business computer business class.
I had to go to university. I had to do a proper quote unquote degree. And that was my sort of, that was payment to my parents.
For,
first of all, for being alive, I guess.
Right.
And then secondly, for everything they've done to support me. That's a trade off. But because I knew I wanted to be an actor so young, and actually, man, it was traumatic at a point, but I sort of knew I was fighting a losing battle because, so I auditioned for drama schools, figuring that if I got in and got a scholarship, they would much rather me go and get a free education, even if it was in theater, as opposed to me paying to do a degree.
To go to business computer business class school, yeah.
Exactly, but they were not for that at all. And so
damn.
I still had to go and get a loan and go to university.
For three years. How did you like persevere through? Were you just in hell?
I wasn't, because the company that you spoke of earlier, the National Youth Music Theatre, I did it all the way through university.
Oh, great. Okay,
so
thank God.
I would literally go from lectures to the West End and perform, and then would go on a tour in the summer, and was always constantly being able to be proactive and creative.
Okay, good. You had a emotional out. Because when
did.
I was reading that knew you wanted to be an actor and then had to go to business of computer business school, I was like, oh God.
Yeah.
Of all that, that's like the opposite of that.
I sort of feel like at the time I felt like I didn't have a choice. Clearly I did, but it wasn't an option for me.
I get it. Our parents have a very strong hold.
They definitely do.
What's your most feminine trait that you like about yourself?
I think the most feminine trait that I like about myself, it's funny. Like, it's weird that me saying softness or sensitivity is a feminine trait, because it is something I like about myself.
Oh my God. But that's such a, that's my girlfriend says that for her about, that's one of her traits that she likes about herself too. Mm. And I think it takes so much strength to have softness.
And it takes vulnerability. Mm-hmm. Here's a story that my friend Ben Barnes, who I mentioned before, will be telling. But Ben Barnes has been a close friend of mine since we were teenagers. And his mother is one of the sort of world leading sexual and relationship therapists.
Oh, wow.
So the show, if you've seen it, Sex Education on Netflix.
I've just been hearing people talk about it. I want to watch it.
That was basically my friend Ben's life because his mother was a sexual therapist.
Oh, my God.
And so it means that it meant that when we were young, we'd be having dinner around his house and she would ask questions about sex. And he'd be like, Mom, don't ask these questions. But it was so useful to me because it was very liberating, first and foremost, to be able to talk about that with a grown up.
Yes.
And secondly, I got basically the best advice and support and free therapy throughout my 20s. In a relationship I was having at the time, I remember it coming up that I was maybe too sensitive, or me, I guess, internalizing that as I wasn't manly enough. And Ben's mum, wonderful Trisha, she said to me at the time that the biggest thing that she comes across in her work is if men were more sensitive, it would save more marriages. And never let anyone tell you that your sensitivity is a bad thing. And so I think I sort of have taken that on board from a very early age. And I was very grateful to Trisha Barnes for that advice. And so it's not really been a factor for me in my adult life.
That's so great to have someone intervene with your young like that to say that.
Yeah.
Because sensitivity needs to be guarded. Because also to be sensitive, but still aware and operating in this world and not, and just like putting yourself out there, but saying, I'm going to preserve my sensitivity in the face of this shit. That's very, you know, that I think that's like, that's one of my favorite things about my girlfriend, and that's that she is able to preserve a sensitivity.
Yeah. And you know, when you get to being a grown up, then it's vulnerability that the world just does not value. But it's really, really important to be vulnerable, you know, in the right sense. You can't be walking around like an exposed nerve, of course.
Absolutely. Of course.
But it is, I think, important. And it's honestly one of the most important traits, I think, in my work as well, to be open and to be vulnerable and to be just sort of yes anding as much as you possibly can and not throwing up barriers. It's just not helpful.
Also with sensitivity, I think being sensitive allows you to be a better listener.
Yeah.
And that's big in acting.
It really is. It's
everything. From my like minuscule, I took my acting classes where I was just hanging on by a thread.
Yeah.
Hanging on by a thread with the acting classes.
I bet you were excellent.
It's very hard.
Well, what you do is impossible to me, so.
I'll tell you a secret with the stand-up. You say the same thing all the time, so you practice that. Not that it makes it easier, but it's, you know.
That's similar to doing a play,
I guess. Say the same thing a lot, and then you'll notice people go and they go, oh, this just happened. Never happened. Didn't just happen. Never gonna happen. But you're just saying it to make it seem like it came up off the top of your
head. I love that.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Now we have a listener email. Thank you so much for your emails. Write into AMA@betches.com for our segment, Why Do Men? Dear Emma and Man, I'm calling to ask a question for you guys because I feel like this podcast is so candid. I want to know realistically from a guy what he expects in the bedroom. I have a long-term boyfriend, but I just want to know if guys prefer when someone is really active during sex, or do they feel like that's too much and would rather we let them take the lead? Do they want equal participation? Do they want us to just lay there like a corpse? What exactly are you guys looking for? Ooh.
Bless that question.
Yeah, bless that question.
I feel it. I'm by no means an expert in this, and you know, caveat, take this or leave it.
Yes.
I just think, for me at least, openness is important. Yes. I think it's very easy to be guarded and to be, you know, concerned about your body or have you. I think if you've got into a position where you're, hopefully if you've got into a position where you're willing to be naked with someone, you can sort of let some of that go and just be in the moment and be open and let the guards down in that moment, I would say.
I think that's a great answer too, because it's like, well said. It's like following it like a dance, because sometimes when it's like, okay, I need to play this role and this person needs to play this role, I understand that too. I mean, I would say like in my relationships, it usually falls into, I mean, there's so many different ways to do it. Cause it's like, well, I would say for me personally, the laying there like a corpse, I would err on the side of not that, unless you're role playing something where you are a corpse and it's pre done out beforehand.
Right.
Well, role playing something you're a corpse isn't the craziest thing. Cause there was this porn I used to watch. It's called Free You. Imagine I said corpse porn, which would be fine too.
No judgment.
It's consenting adults, but called Free Use, where it would be like you're walking around and then you go bing, and then someone's frozen, and then you can just kind of do what you want to them.
Okay, like sexy musical statues.
You like sexy musical statues? That would have been a much yes, exactly. That's what sexy musical statues. So that can be like a. Not a, I don't even know if it's like a kink or proclivity or something where it can be like, hey, I just want you to lay there, and that's one thing. But if that's not pre-discussed, then I would say any type of any presence and being in the moment then helps like the tempo of it. So I would say it's more of a question of like if someone, does the person want you to be like more dominant, more submissive, or lead more or not, like. And that's really like an individual you and the partner thing, you know? Because like I wouldn't. My girlfriend and I do this like thing, like we're both not into us sexual position wise, is more it's me on top and I'll wear like a strap on or something. But if I'm with someone that said, no, I want to like ride you all the time, I'd go, it's just not for me. Uh-huh. So about once a year, we do a yearly riding and then that's it. So I was saying, if all of a sudden she started saying, hey, I'm going to do this, then I would be like, whoa.
That's not what we do.
And so we do it once a year, maybe even every 2 years. It's fine. You know, but also I can get into anything if the person is into it. Like, so right. If someone was super into that, actually, then I could get really into it, actually.
It's funny. I was going to also add that it also depends if you're just new to someone or if it's just a one-night thing.
Oh my God, of course.
As opposed to a long-term relationship thing.
Totally.
Because then, of course, I think, you know, variety is important and it is the spice of life in that regard.
That's true. And I think that's so true. And I think like any type of, if you are in, you know, I would say what men expect, I'm gonna like kindly and warmly encourage to actually think of it. Think like, what do you expect and what do you want? Because just us talking about it is like helping me see, like, I think the more you know what you want in the equation and what makes you feel comfortable, I think for a good sexual partner, that will reverberate to them.
That's a brilliant answer.
You know what
I'm
saying?
How I feel in the moment of it as well. Like
I just thought of it.
I want that person to be experiencing pleasure in the way they want to experience pleasure.
Yes. Yeah. And then because that helps the dance.
Yeah.
So I think like that, where it's like, if you, the more you know what you expect, it makes you feel good. As corny as it might sound, I really do think it's the truth. Then you'll be bringing that into the bedroom and he can work around that. Now, mm-hmm. I'm not saying that means, and that doesn't mean, like, my girlfriend's very comfortable in what she wants in the bedroom, and that's to be like in a more submissive role. Mm-hmm. So then it doesn't mean knowing what you want then means you're like running the show, but everybody's running the show.
Yeah.
Everybody's running the show. But I think the more you're into it, that's going to reverberate and that's what you should expect to go in and have a good time for you and then take care of them too as a dance with each other. But you gotta, what is it? You put your mask on first or something?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
I don't know if that makes it sound like, but I don't mean that in like a selfish way.
No.
But it's like, you know, just if you say, what does he expect? You know, put him on ice for a second.
I agree.
Do you expect? What do you want? And then when you go in and then like you with the open mind, then it allows for the dance.
Yeah. And then I think actually as you go along that road of being more focused in that regard, then I think you can also be open to being demanding of what it is that you require.
Right.
That's kind of harder. It sounds like that's kind of the beginning of a situation.
Yes.
Kind of harder at the beginning. But as you go along, I think don't be afraid to ask for what it is that you need.
Yes. And be like, you know, or even if you're like, I don't know exactly what I want in the bedroom. Like, let's like kind of try to figure it out together. You know, watching porn together, that's a tough one. Cause I feel like porn is so removed from anything that really would bring up sexual ideas, but maybe, or try the corpse thing I just laid out. Try the corpse thing. I'm going to work on being more open. I shouldn't be so rigid. I'm like, oh, we do a yearly riding. I'm going to be more open. Say, well, you know, so
I'm excited for you.
Thank you. Now we have a segment, Ask GK Anything. This is a part of the show where we're going to get a little deeper inside the male mind with some specific questions from my guests.
Please.
Okay.
How did your relationship with your father impact your idea of masculinity?
It probably was the bedrock of my idea, because my dad sadly passed away when I was 24, but he had kids later in his life. So I benefited. At the time, it felt like an encumbrance. It felt like, oh, I wish my dad could come and watch me play soccer like the other dads. But what it meant now, looking back 18 years past, is that I was so grateful that he was present, that he was always there. And that's a big deal. It's a really big deal, knowing, you know, how friends, or just knowing, you know, how difficult it is to be a parent in general. And you've got to be the breadwinner. You've got to go out there and do things as a parent, mother or father. And to have a father who was present, who was just always there, maybe not full of like words of advice necessarily, but certainly always there with a listening ear. That's something I really miss. And I'm really grateful and lucky to have my mom. But having that space, and especially as a young boy growing up, to have that from a man was very, very important.
You felt heard.
I did. I definitely did. And it also reverberates throughout my life. Like, I haven't had a conversation with my dad in 18 years.
Right.
But there are still things that I remember specifically about his presence and his words and his love for us all. I'm one of four siblings. And so it was different for each of us, I'm sure. And there's a big age range in the four of us. But it was, for me, very, very important to have his presence more than anything else.
Feeling heard is so paramount. Because I didn't realize it until I've been in therapy this past year, like how huge, like not feeling, the impact of not feeling heard can be. And then the ways a lot of time they can be destructive, maybe some positive too, where you try to feel heard.
Mm-hmm.
But feeling heard is such a monumental thing.
It is.
Because you feel seen and recognized.
And if you get that foundationally, then I think it helps you as you move through life.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. From an actor's perspective, is there any difference in the experience of being directed by a man or a woman?
I was just talking with a friend about, not from an actor's perspective, but I was talking to a friend about world leaders recently, just yesterday actually, and the fact that it's just proven, isn't it? I'm not pandering, I really am not, but it's just proven that women do that job better. They're more effective leaders. I was working La Brea, the show that's on, that you might see tomorrow.
Hell yeah.
But we shoot that in Australia, and I was very fortunate in the second and third season to be able to travel a bit more. The first season was pandemic, couldn't move anywhere. But I went to New Zealand, and I've always loved the idea of New Zealand, and it's beautiful. And Jacinda Ardern, who was the Prime Minister of New Zealand at the time, she was just such an effective leader. She's like 40 years old. She was very young doing it. And when the time came for her to step down, she just did it. She just left. She was just like peaced out. And then, and then she got married. Like she was the first world leader to have a child while in office, I think. And then when she was done and just got married and has a normal life now, I imagine. Like, that's just so antithetical to maleness.
Totally.
Like, men hold on to the bitter end in leadership, and they're just not as malleable. And I can say, in the times that I've spent on sets or in the theater with female directors, that is also true. It's not to say, it's just better for me in the way that I like to learn and the way that I like to do my job. It's more sort of all encompassing. It's more like a family than like a dictatorship.
More malleable is a really great word.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's different too with like American men, or I had this British guy who was directing me once, and he was so keen and sensitive with like how he would phrase things.
Okay, yeah.
And I loved that. But that is so interesting that she was 40 and then just yet to just leave. That is like a really novel concept.
It really is.
Of someone with power, because usually I think of it, then they're like, oh, power, and then they're like trying to, I don't even know what, have a daytime talk show and start a book. I don't even know what they're trying to do. Right. Not go away.
That's for sure.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Would you avoid having a first date on Valentine's Day? What's a good way to ask someone out on that day without putting any pressure on the situation?
I'm quite spontaneous. I like being like, hey, let's go to Mexico City on our second date.
Hell yeah.
So yeah, I'd do it. I don't necessarily advise it, but
I think also too, if someone says, hey, listen, you're free on Valentine's Day, I'm free on Valentine's Day, we can do a no pressure Valentine's Day.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I've ever done that.
Me neither.
But I certainly am open to it.
What's the manliest thing you've ever done? How proud of it are you?
Oh gosh, I have such a dear, lovely friend called Chris in LA. I used to rent my friend Chris and Renee's guest house at the back of the house. One day Chris was making with his bare hands a Murphy bed.
Damn.
And he prepared it. It was like the precision in it. And all of a sudden I heard this giant crash, bang, wallop, and the bed fell and smashed into literally a million pieces. And he just sat out back with his head in his hands and was just mortified. And I was like, come on, man, we're going to do this. And we went to Home Depot and just the two of us with our shirts off, just building this bed.
You just ripped your shirt off.
I didn't need to.
Yeah, it was cold out.
I'm not all that handsy, but it was like working with your hands and we rebuilt it in like a couple of hours. And it was just I felt like such an achievement, manly achievement for doing it.
Yes, you conquered it.
We did.
What do you have in your fridge right now?
I have some Parmesan cheese.
Great cheese.
I have some pineapple that I bought last night.
Love pineapple.
And I have some wilted salad lettuce that I just can't bring myself to throw away.
Yeah,
I always buy salad with the intention of eating it. And I must have wasted like thousands of dollars worth of salad.
The amount of wilted lettuce in refrigerators, because it's just not happening.
No.
But it's the lie.
It's the lie.
Everyone wants to keep the narrative going that they're going to have a salad tomorrow.
You've got to do it the second you get back from the store. Otherwise, it's not happening.
Eat it in the car on the way home and just cry to get that down.
Mouth handfuls of lettuce.
Would it be a relationship deal breaker if you really disliked the friends of someone you were newly dating?
I don't think so. I don't think there are any deal breakers at this sort of stage of my development as a human. but I do think, obviously, who we hang around reflects on us. I think more the opposite would be more true. Like, it would definitely be impressed upon me if the person had very high value, wonderful people around them. I don't think I'm not judgmental enough to care about if they were terrible people.
That's a good way to look at it, actually, to say I'm going to have it be more neutral if it's a negative, and then if it's a positive, then that's like a nice bonus.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the most embarrassing thing you've ever done in front of someone you were trying to impress?
Oh, I don't know why my mind went here straight away. Thankfully, the first thing that came to my mind didn't happen directly in front of the person who I was trying to impress.
That helps.
But it was something that I'm still so grateful for that it didn't go the way it could have done. In fact, do you know what? This is funny. It wasn't Valentine's Day, but it was definitely a first date in a really lovely restaurant in London. I was in my 20s. Bless her, I can still see her face. We had a beautiful date and it was a really highly recommended restaurant. And I walked her home and was being very much a gentleman. And we stood at her door and she asked me if I wanted to come in. And I was like, you know what? It was such a great first date. We'll do this again next time. I went home and had the most explosive food poisoning symptoms that I've ever experienced in my life. And was literally curled up in a ball on the floor, crying for my mother.
Oh, food poisoning's brutal.
And I was so grateful after that all passed that I didn't go into her home and experience the both ends that I did in her bathroom. It would have been soul destroying. It would have been awful.
That was the universe looking out for you.
It really was. I feel like in a weird inverse way, I was being rewarded for being a gentleman.
Yes.
Somehow.
You still got the food poisoning, but somehow. Absolutely.
Oh, it could have been so much worse.
Did you see her again?
I did. And I don't know if I told her that immediately.
Right.
But I probably did tell her later on.
Yeah, because having a food poisoning on a first date would probably be the absolute worst time to have food poisoning. Yeah,
I think I asked her the next day, like, are you okay?
Feel?
Yeah, exactly. And she was like, oh, I'm great. Like, but we had different dishes. I had the duck. I don't know how I got food poisoning from duck.
I got food poisoning once from a vegan Indian restaurant, and it was the same day I actually had this big audition at a comedy club, and I remember throwing up on my way there and throwing up on my way back. And I remember when I got out of an Uber looking like shit, this comic was like, hey, are you good? And I was like, yeah, I'm auditioning here tonight. And then I was like, actually, I feel good. And then I like ran and went in a corner and got sick. And he was like, ah, man, nerves. And I was like, no.
That's the vegan truck there.
Yeah, this is so much more than that. This is our final segment called Who, What, Where, When, How.
Okay.
Who do men most want approval from?
Their mothers.
I actually feel that for me.
Yeah?
Yeah, definitely. I always want my approval. But also, I wonder if this, I know for me, my mom is not, she's not free given of approval. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that makes me covet it.
Yeah. I think I was the same slightly in that we had this sort of thing as kids, me and my siblings, that it would take so much to impress
so much.
My mother. And what look, she's hell? Sort of, she has sort of become more like, you know, like that in her older age. But I'd be, as a kid, be like, Mom, I'm going to come home with an Oscar one day and be like, Mom, I want an Oscar. And you'd be like, oh, that's nice.
Right. Exactly.
But yeah, you know, I guess like, okay, it
where are you
going
to put it?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have a shelf in here or did you forget to get a shelf? And you're like, what? Yeah, I know to impress my mom though, one thing that would be so impressive to her that I don't do is she's like, I don't recycle 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. I recycle, but it's not like I don't have it. It's like a little haphazardly. And I know if I said, Mom, I'm recycling all day, every day. If I see someone not recycling, I say something, she would be so impressed.
Oh, I love that.
But then I'm not doing that.
The one thing you can do.
So easy to do. She'd be like, I'm so proud of you.
Well, it's funny. I was back home for Christmas and I have, thankfully, I'm very grateful for it, a couple of awards along the way. But I was like very in that same vein, wanted my mum to have yes. them. And I live in the States, she lives in the UK. And I got back and she'd rearranged the living room. And I was like, Mum, where's that award? She's like, well, you can take it if you want. I didn't take it. I actually need to bring it back to America with me.
That's going to fuel me to get all the other awards.
Exactly.
What do men do to release pent-up emotions?
I don't know about what men do necessarily. Probably lots of things, but I certainly, you know what, I had this conversation yesterday as well. I wish I was a sort of person who would be like, I'm gonna go and run.
Oh my god, don't we all wish that? Could you imagine?
And when I see people running and it's 23 degrees out, I'm like, what the fuck are you doing?
Totally
go away.
100%.
I live in Brooklyn and it's like, oh, it's just, it's sort of ruined. I like to go for a walk in the morning, but
yeah, you go, you're fucking up my day.
You're just ruining it for
yes.
me.
Yes, I don't. I feel that too. With if I'm like, maybe if I'm exercising a lot, I don't have that. I always do. Whenever I see runners, I'm like, you little motherfucker.
Come on.
Just out there in your thoughts, plotting along, getting yeah. dopamine. It really, if you're running and listening to this, good for you.
Good for you.
Good for you.
If you're running at like Olympic marathon pace in Prospect Park, fuck off.
Then we're not it.
Then we're not into it.
Know how you're making other people feel,
yeah,
okay?
Exactly. Be thoughtful. Come on.
Where do men want to spend their day off?
You know, I like working. I really do. I really enjoy my job. I wouldn't have days off if I could help it. But I do. I think I've latterly learned to enjoy like an actual vacation. No, it's not a day off, I know, but whenever I would travel before, it'd be for work and I'd be sort of traveling for sport almost.
Yes.
But now I tend to relax a bit more. It's nice to be by a pool or a beach or something.
I think it shows like more comfort in where you're at in life sometimes when you can take a break.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true.
When do men start practicing self-care?
For me, it was, you know, so I lived in LA for 10 years. I have nothing against LA. I actually really like LA. And
I like it too.
I enjoy being there more now than I did when I was there. But when you live in New York and you go to LA, it's like, I don't know, it's like you can just sort of peek into a dream world for a little while. And New York feels real.
Yeah.
But LA, feel as though I needed more self-care sort of techniques.
Oh, in LA more so than in New York?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And maybe because I practiced them.
Right.
Being in nature, you know, going for hikes or what have you. Then I think I've sort of allowed that to become part of my more of my routine. But I do need to be near green spaces if I can. I love Manhattan, but I couldn't live in Manhattan.
Right.
I enjoy being in Brooklyn. I'm near a park. It's sort of, maybe it's a bit more how I grew up in the UK as well, but it's nice to be able to spend some time outside. And honestly, the biggest thing is not thinking about yourself all the time.
Totally.
Yeah.
That's what they say. And like, that's like a hallmark of support groups. So they'll be like, you know, whenever you're in your head too much, turn it over, help someone else.
Yeah.
And at first it can be like, what?
Yeah.
But then it's the second you do that, it really does make you feel better.
I definitely learned that in LA as well. It's because it's so easy to be all about yourself.
Totally.
You're there and you're there for a reason. Everyone's there right. for the same reason pretty much. But it was taking moments to really think about how I can be in the community, be supporting yes. other people, be there for friends. And I think I became a more effective activist living in LA because I had that outlook of, and that's, you know, when I went to North Dakota, to Standing Rock, it's doing things like that were very, very helpful for me.
That's like a final, not that I know the levels in therapy, but that's like, I feel like a big one that my therapist put on. She was like, okay, then if you're like that stuck in yourself now, I think it's time for you to volunteer or do something.
And I said, you know, it's easy to forget it though, but it's certainly, looking back, I'm so grateful that I had that opportunity.
Yes. And doing little acts of service, like I'm going to clean this like mold or whatever you're doing, like little things. Then you're like, okay, I feel
Don't
better.
Don't live around mold. It's very bad.
Don't live around mold. True. How do men talk to other men about their love life?
I love these questions. That's I'm really very fortunate that I have friends who I sort of grew up with who are very, I guess we've been on the journey together and we are quite similar in our outlooks. And so I definitely have more emotionally eloquent conversations with men now than I did when I was 25 or what have you. I often tell my male friends that I love them.
I love that.
Yeah, I think it's important. And it doesn't feel performative. It's just like a really important part of how I interact with my close male friends. But I think I've managed to just, it depends. I there are certain male friends I wouldn't talk to about emotional things because it's not what our friendships are for.
Right.
But I'm really grateful for two or three I'm thinking of that we can be entirely open about the experiences we're having, what we're going through.
Right.
So yeah, lean on your support. Lean on the people around you. It's so important.
Thank you so much for being here. And where can people find you online? If you do that, where can people find you?
I sort of do. So on Instagram, I'm Chike_Okonkwo. Twitter or X, Chike Aokonkwo. They're kind of the two I use. Actually, I'm starting to really, really want to like TikTok, but I haven't quite gotten there yet.
You know, I if you have persisted this long without it, the best case scenario is you're just going to have something that kind of is entertaining for a bunch of hours, but I can't, it's not like you see people out in the, I don't know if it actually enhances your life at all. Look, I love it. Like I go, this is my happy time. Scroll. Can't remember one thing I saw on it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's a lot coming at your brain. Like my algorithm now is hip stretching videos, mini pancakes, and tracking down and persecuting pedophiles.
That's very specific.
Wild. Three things that shouldn't even be mixed.
You're like a flexible vigilante.
Right. Exactly. It's too many. It's a lot of, it's just a lot for your brain. So yeah. If you haven't like opened that door, humbly, I would say, you know, God bless, and then there's better things you can do with your brain.
I'm taking that advice. Thank you. So you're just welcome. Instagram and Twitter.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to Ask Men Anything. Please DM me at Emma Willman on Instagram. Email your questions to AMA@betches.com for our next guest, or leave us a voicemail at 201-754-8351. I'll talk to you next week when we ask men anything. Ask Men Anything is produced by Sean Kilby and Rebecca Steinberg. Editing by Jazz Zapatos, Rebecca Steinberg, and Shannon Sassone. Guest booking by Anna Zagzag. Send your emails to AMA@betches.com.
Betches.